You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Good morning. It is Friday, April 9th. You are listening to the College Football Daily. My name is Lance Glynn, back to host another episode as Trey is out. And if you can't get enough of me, I'll also be your host for Monday's episode as well. As you guys know, we are attempting to hit every Power 5 school and a few Group of 5 schools this offseason here on the College Football Daily. We are almost halfway there, and in case you missed your favorite team, don't worry. We have them all on Spotify for you. Just go to Spotify, search for the playlist across the country with the College Football Daily, and find every single team preview episode we have done so far. I am very excited now to continue climbing to our goal. And for today's episode, I am happy to be joined by Stephen Bailey of Cuse Nation to talk Syracuse Orange football as they progress through spring practice. Stephen, thanks so much for joining me today. How are we doing?
Yeah, no problem. I appreciate you having me on. Hoop season just ended and spring football's here. So definitely excited to be turning the page.
So, Stephen, I wanted to start with head coach Dino Babers. And I know you and I were talking a little bit off air about this. You know, he's been at Syracuse 5 seasons now, only one winning season in 2018. Of course, the win over Clemson back in 2017, but 5-7 in 2019, 1-10 last year. Do you believe Babers is on the hot seat entering 2021? Or do you think, you know, barring a 1 or 2 win season this year, he'll be back for 2022?
Yeah, I think he'll be back. I think something that indicate, you know, instability in the program would have to happen for him not to be back. You know, a one win season in a particular fashion, you know, you see players quit on the team or mass exodus of coaches, so, you know, something weird. You know, I think everyone in the administration of Syracuse realizes how hard it is to win football-wise, just geographic limitations, no recent history of winning, minimal recent history of winning. They went 10-3 a few years ago, but, you know, they're working against basically the entire lifetime of every kid they recruit. You know, they haven't been that good. So, you know, I don't think Dino's on the hot seat. You know, I think he is certainly motivated to do better. I think there were a lot of things that worked against them last year. He went and hired 2 new coordinators right before the coronavirus pandemic started. So they got 3 days of spring ball and shorts to install before, you know, fall camp. And then the team was just coming back together then, because Syracuse over the summer had its players in small pods. You know, there was really a lot of installation limitations, and then a bunch of offensive line injuries during the preseason led Syracuse to start its fullback at left guard for most of the year. So, you know, there was a lot working again, and the rescheduling last year hurt them significantly. They opened on the road against Pittsburgh and North Carolina, I believe, instead of getting a couple of early cupcakes. It just didn't happen. So there's a lot of things that was working against them. And, you know, I think they should be a little better this year, but I think Dino would really need to have 2 pretty bad years for that to realistically come into play. And of course, the financials are a factor as well. He was given an extension after the 10-3 year. That means the buyout went up. And coming off of a pandemic, are you going to pay to buy out your head coach and then pay for someone who you think can do a better job? At Syracuse, I would be surprised if that happened next year.
Now, I know the Orange, they were bitten by the opt-out last season as well, and you mentioned it dealt with a ton of injuries. And look, obviously no team had a normal offseason. You just hit on that. And even the regular season on a weekly basis was filled with so much uncertainty. But if you could pinpoint, I guess, 1 or 2 things that you think had the biggest impact in that 1-10 season last year, what would those 2 things be?
I know the pandemic affected everybody, but I mean, they switched defenses to the 3-3-5. You know, like you need to get on the field and like actually go through the motions, and players need to know what certain spots and movements feel like and how the spacing works up front. Like, that's something that can't really be replaced. And I will say Tony White, the defensive coordinator, I thought he did a very good job of kind of piecemealing in what he could and then expanding it slowly during the season. It, you know, what certainly wasn't perfect, but it never felt like the guys were overwhelmed. And I think that the defense was clearly the better unit than the offense last year. But Sterling Gilbert hired his offensive coordinator and didn't get a spring ball or a fall camp to really install anything. And, you know, I think he was brought in to kind of add just another perspective in the offensive brain trust, so to speak. And, you know, Dino Babers is obviously a huge part of what they do offensively, but Sterling does some things differently. And I don't know if he got a chance to really put in everything he wanted to. The second variable, and this is, you know, something that extends beyond last year, is offensive line play. I mean, Syracuse had a bunch of injuries last year, but depth on the offensive line has been a problem. throughout the Dino Babers era. 2 years ago, it was a big problem as well. That 2018 season, everybody likes to remember Eric Dungy was the quarterback, and he's certainly a phenomenal player. Syracuse had all six of its regularly playing offensive linemen. They rotated three guards healthy the whole year. I mean, they had a senior-laden offensive line healthy the whole year and two capable quarterbacks. You know, so that's, in a sense, I do view that kind of as an anomaly. Might be a little strong, but a lot of things went right that don't normally go right. I mean, injury luck does not normally benefit, you know, a team that under-recruits against its competition, plays in a really tough conference, and runs a hurry-up offense, so often plays more plays than your average team. You kind of got these variables working against you where you might even want extra depth. And offensive line's just been a big problem the last 2 years. And, you know, to compile that, then your quarterback depth becomes a problem, and Syracuse, ever since Dungy left, hasn't had a second quarterback behind Tommy DeVito. I'm sure we're going to get into Garrett Schrader a little bit, but that is one of the potential differences for the 2021 season.
Joined by Stephen Bailey of the 24/7 Sports Syracuse site, Cuse Nation, on the College Football Daily podcast. We will talk more about the Orange when we come back.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's Masters Week, and that means CBS Sports HQ is your home for round-the-clock coverage from Augusta. That includes tournament picks, round-by-round matchups, highlights, leaderboard updates, and we even have our pal from the First Cut podcast, Kyle Porter, on site. You know, he's providing up-to-the-minute updates, so you'll know everything there is to know from Augusta. If you're wondering what CBS Sports HQ is, it's our 24/7, 365 days a year sports news network. How to get it? It's easy and it's free. Just go to cbssports.com, the CBS Sports mobile app, or fire up the CBS Sports app on your connected TV and watch yourself become the most in-the-know sports fan on your group text. Stephen, let's get into some of the different position groups now, and I want to start with quarterback. You mentioned before the break, Tommy DeVito enters his fifth season at Syracuse. He was the starter last year before he got injured and was ruled out for the year against Duke. Babers goes out this offseason, brings in some competition in Mississippi State transfer Garrett Schrader. It's still very early, but do you think this move was more depth related to, you know, have someone behind DeVito, as you mentioned, just in case the offensive line doesn't hold up and he gets injured again? Or does Schrader actually have a shot to win the job this year?
Well, that's one of those lines as a head coach that has to be walked delicately. If you want to bring in another Power 5 transfer quarterback, they need to believe that they have a chance to compete for the job. And, you know, frankly, I think Garrett Schrader will get enough reps to, quote unquote, compete for the job. But I would be very surprised if he outperformed Tommy DeVito in practice. And the biggest reason is that, you know, if you're grading throws and mechanics and decision making and, you know, above the shoulders kind of stuff, I mean, Tommy's been in the system for 4 years. He's got 2 years of starting experience. He's known for his arm strength and his accuracy. It's just hard for, I think, that the things that Garrett does well don't always show up in practice, at least when you're going ones versus ones or ones versus twos, right? I mean, if you put him on the threes or on the twos and he's live, you know, you can see the playmaking ability, the scrambling ability, throwing on the run. I mean, those are the things that jump out off his high school tape. those are some things that Syracuse could really use with the offensive line issues they've had. So I think it's almost a certainty that as long as Garrett is healthy and the one-time transfer proposal is passed, he is going to play next year. Like, Tommy DeVito is not going to make it through a whole season without needing at least part of a game off due to injury, just based on past precedent. It would be tremendous injury luck for that to happen. I just think Garrett's time to shine is kind of when, you know, you don't have time for some of your slower developing plays and you need to make the defense account for the quarterback as another run. So, you know, I think if he can show that in practice, maybe, you know, I'm not saying it's not impossible. I think he's going to get the reps to have a chance. I just think his value is going to be at its highest when you get into a game situation and when everything you planned for the offensive line to be better for, you know, it doesn't pan out and you do have some issues, you can kind of put Garrett in to do that. But it really is fascinating. And I think the dynamic between Tommy and Garrett's going to be very interesting to follow through preseason camp.
Yeah, definitely something to watch always when you bring in a transfer quarterback, especially when you have a returning starter on your roster as well. Look, we talked off air and you also mentioned it to me earlier in the podcast. The offensive line, maybe more than any other group on that side of the ball, has crippled the Orange the last few seasons. Mike Schmidt was hired in February as the new offensive line coach, replacing Mike Cavanaugh, who left for Arizona State. So I kind of have a two-part question for you here. What makes you, I guess, optimistic that the Orange could improve on the line? And at the same time, what makes you wary that the line might not make the jump it needs to in order to protect whoever the quarterback is against Ohio on September 4th?
Well, the sunny side is they get everybody back. And the quick counter to that is, well, those are the guys who weren't particularly good last year. But some of them were hurt. I think if you can take the best pieces of last year's line, and I would point to sophomore left tackle Matthew Bergeron, who I think will continue to get better as he gets more experience, and redshirt junior right guard Dakota Davis, who missed the first 7 or 8 games of the year because of a preseason injury. If you take those two guys, who I think the staff feels good about, and you can put them with at least a couple other guys who you really like, then you got a chance to be better. One of those other guys is probably going to be Chris Bleich, who is a transfer guard from Florida 2 cycles ago. He had to sit out last year, was not given immediate eligibility by the NCAA. So he, you know, he's coming off double hip surgery. So there are health concerns, but he has SEC playing experience. He has the adequate size. I think there's hope he will be the other guard with Dakota Davis. And I think the plan is to go out and get a transfer tackle. Syracuse has pursued Texas's Willie Tyler pretty actively. You know, Willie's a big bodied tackle. Did not play at all for the Longhorns over 3 years. He opted out last year because of COVID concerns. You know, can he come in and give you a boost? If not, and this is kind of, to me, this is kind of the tipping point. Can you get that fourth lineman that you really like? If not, you're banking on guys who were here last year. And I wouldn't really characterize many of them as promising. You know, I mean, I think Aaron Service is coming back for his 6th year. He's played center and tackle. I think he's a great leader, very well respected in the locker room. You know, he's had some issues. He gave up a lot of pressures last year. I think he was playing through a bit of an injury, you know, so in his defense, there's that. But is he going to make a huge jump? I don't know. The redshirt sophomore center, Carlos Vitarello, is he going to make a big jump? I don't know. You know, I mean, those are kind of two guys you look at. Redshirt junior guard Darius Tisdale, a former JUCO guy, another candidate to try and make a jump. But I just, you know, I don't know that there's going to be enough development from those guys that it'll be enough for the group as a whole to be better and to be able to survive an injury or two. But if you can bring in one more good transfer, maybe two, Syracuse has 2 scholarship spots left. I wouldn't blame Dino for using them both on offensive linemen the way the last couple of years have gone. Like, if you can't get that influx of talent and have 6 or 7 linemen you really trust, it can unravel really fast. And I think Syracuse has seen that the last 2 years.
So, Stephen, I want to switch over to the defensive side. As we look at it, I think the biggest turnover comes in the secondary. What worries you most about the changes coming for that unit? And who do you look at to step up at defensive back?
You know, I would say what worries me most is just the playmaking and the experience that kind of goes. I mean, it's, you know, exactly what you'd kind of expect. You're losing 3 guys potentially to the NFL, all of them who could have come back. And even if you really like your young guys, and I think Syracuse does, they're going to make some mistakes and they're not fully grown, you know, especially the guys who played last year. They didn't get the chance to redshirt because 2 of the 3 guys leaving for the NFL opted out early in the season, in the first half of the season. you know, so that these guys who were freshmen last year and got that quote unquote free year that the players like to say, didn't get to spend it in the weight room. And I think there's something you get out of playing, certainly, especially when it's a new scheme like this. And I think that gave the coaches a chance to do some evaluation as well. But you don't have the physical bodies to come in and hit a ton. And the way Syracuse played last year, going three and out a ton, the defense was out there. They were frequently tired by the end of the game, and it was not their fault. You know, I mean, these guys were really laying it out there. So I think there's going to be a small step back there. I think the strength of the unit is clearly Garrett Williams, a redshirt freshman corner. So he'll be a third-year corner. He'll stay a redshirt freshman. All ACC-type player. I mean, wise beyond his years. Other teams are not going to throw at Garrett. They're going to throw at the other four guys back there. The question is who can really emerge. Jahad Carter was their boundary safety last year as a true freshman. Prep school guys who are a year older than the rest of the guys in his class. I think he's someone who could take a big step forward. Neil Nunn, redshirt freshman corner. I think he could end up playing free safety, which is effectively nickelback in the 3-3-5. Coming off offseason ACL surgery. Don't think he's full go in this throughout the spring. You know, in the fall, he's someone who I've got my eye on. And then they did go out and get a transfer commitment, Jason Simmons Jr. from New Mexico State, who I think fits their rover position really well. Playing the deep third, really good instincts, good anticipation, pretty good ball skills. You know, so basically how many of those guys can step up and really go out and make plays? And, you know, obviously you're going to make mistakes when you're young, but can you counter them with interceptions? It's a movement-based scheme. I think the front six is going to be pretty good. Syracuse's linebackers are... they're young guys who are already turning the corner, and the defensive line is basically all fifth and sixth year guys who are just solid and reliable. So if the back end can capitalize on some of the pressure and confusion that's created up front, you know, I think that 3-3-5 can really, you know, take a step maybe into the top half of the ACC this year. But if the secondary has issues and that maybe affects how much pressure Tony White wants to bring, then you know, you get a little bit more hamstrung and you can see how the youth would really lead to, you know, some issues on the field.
Steven, last one before I let you go. Looking at the Syracuse schedule, at Ohio on September 4th, my Rutgers Scarlet Knights head to the Carrier Dome on September 11th. Albany comes September 18th, Liberty September 24th, and then ACC play starts. What are reasonable expectations looking at the schedule for 2021? Look, I'm sure everyone believes that Syracuse isn't a 1-10 team, but is there belief that they can make the jump back into a bowl game, or are 4 to maybe 5 wins looking more likely for the Orange this season?
Yeah, I mean, I think probably I would guess the line is around 5. I think injury luck and how quickly some of those younger guys develop are going to be a big part of whether, you know, they fall at 4 or 5 or they fall at 6 or 7. It really doesn't take much. But just listing off that schedule, I mean, it's much easier than the one they had last year. And again, the one they had last year was changed by the pandemic. So, you know, how would this team do with last year's schedule? I think they have a much harder time of making a bowl game. But with this year's schedule, I think it's, you know, maybe not quite a coin flip, but they're capable of doing it. It's not hard to envision a scenario in which they start, you know, 3-1 or, you know, best case would be 4-0, not impossible. And then they pick up a couple more wins in the ACC. So I think there's reason to believe this team will win more games. I mean, it would be shocking if they only won 1 or 2 games, you know, just considering the opportunities on the front end of that schedule. But I still think 6 wins would mark a step in the right direction. And I think would allow the coaches to, you know, keep bringing in adequate talent, because once, you know, a lack of success starts affecting you on the recruiting trail, especially at a place like Syracuse, that's when it becomes really hard to envision long-term growth.
Well, look, as a biased Rutgers fan myself, having graduated from there, I certainly hope if they go 3-1 in that non-conference portion, I hope that one of those three isn't the Scarlet Knights on September 11th. You can follow him on Twitter at Steven_Bailey1. He covers Syracuse athletics and recruiting for 24/7 Sports Cuse Nation. Steven, thanks so much for coming on and giving me some time today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, anytime, Lance. I appreciate you having me.
Make sure to rate, review, and follow wherever you get your podcast. A new episode every single day. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Lance Glynn. I hope everyone has a great weekend. I'll be back on Monday for the next edition of the College Football Daily.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean and a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsessed. obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire, now streaming on Paramount+.